Welcome to Great Minds, and our guest today, out of the great city of Chicago, a Midwestern boy, we have Josh Gross. Josh is the Chief Creative Officer at Energy BBDO. Great, great shop, part of the global BBDO Omnicom family. He's been there quite some time and has an incredible resume of places, two of my very favorites. I guess you're over a decade now at Energy BBDO, but we're going to cover the whole continuum, the whole pendulum, Josh, all things Josh Gross. So a hearty welcome here to Great Minds.
Thanks so much for having me. Lovely to be on.
All right. So Josh, one of the things I got to do years ago that was a real privilege was I served on the board of the Virginia Commonwealth University VCU Brand Center. And it's one of the great schools that our industry has. You went to another great school that our industry has, the Miami Ad School. So I'd love to start our conversation going back, you know, right about 20 years to your time at the Miami Ad School.
Okay, so we're going to go all the way back, which is lovely. And I have to say, it was a very close decision between VCU and Miami Ad School. I did kind of the ad school road trip where I started in Virginia, went down to Georgia, and finished up in Miami. But at the time, Miami Ad School was doing a partnership with CPB, with Crispin Porter. And I think that, you know, maybe I was swayed a little bit by the sunshine and the beaches, but you know, that was ultimately what sort of convinced me, I think, to go down south and do Miami Ad School. And it was, I mean, it was an incredible experience, you know, being able to, you know, literally learn from people in the industry, creatives, you know, doing amazing work, be a little bit close to Crispin back in those days, which was really special. And then being able to sort of travel around to the different locations. So, you know, my first internship was in Germany, which was crazy, at Jung von Matt, which was, you know, a really eye-opening and crazy great experience. And bounced around to New York and San Francisco, where I ultimately finished my portfolio there.
And talk about the strategic direction to focus on art direction.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, and I think a lot of young creatives maybe have this. It was definitely my case when I was first trying to figure out where I wanted to focus. You know, there was a part of me that was like, oh, you know, I like doing both. And I remember I had a number of people in the business that sort of counseled me to, you got to pick one to focus, which, you know, made sense when I got a little bit older and a little more mature. But I think ultimately, you know, visuals is just, it's the way I'm wired. It's what I really spark to and connect with. I come from a family of writers and English literature majors, both my parents and my brother. But for me, it's all about visuals, and I love typography and I love color. And I was obsessed with design and physical objects. You know, I used to like just draw shoes as a kid. So I think like while copy was kind of intriguing, art direction just felt naturally what I was sort of most suited to and most excited by.
Great. All right. We're going to come back to that in context with the evolution of the digital world, but let's stay where we are for a moment now. Whatever modest degree of success I've had, I always, in my mind, trace back to those early internships. I went to Emory, which produced doctors and lawyers. I was not good in science and didn't want to be a lawyer, which meant I had to go out and get a regular job. And I did a lot of internships when I was in Atlanta at Emory. Talk about those early experiences interning, and you also got to see some other parts of the world.
Yeah, I mean, it was really wild. We were, the internship program, we were sort of embedded in this small unit within the agency at Jung von Matt called JVM9. And it was kind of this beautiful collection of people from all over the world. It was kind of like their little international department within the agency. And, you know, I mean, I had no idea what I was doing. And the circumstances were such that I think typically through Miami Ad School, you'll kind of go as a team with another student. For whatever reason, I was kind of going there solo, and they partnered me up with someone full-time at the agency, which, you know, at the time was a little bit, well, a lot bit intimidating, but really looking back was like such a unique opportunity to really just like full force be a part of the creative department of this huge, amazing agency in Germany. So it was really, maybe not trial by fire because I don't think they were depending on me to solve anything, but it was certainly kind of like a fast forward way to get brought into the business and just get into the inner workings of like how to get ideas. That was back when we literally did marker comps. That's how we presented ideas to the ECDs, and starting to start practicing that skill of, encapsulating an idea in one little sketch or one little handwritten blurb. It was a lot, but it was so exciting that I think looking back, and I haven't thought back to that in quite a while, but I think that was like a wonderful foundation, like a foundational experience to kind of build upon, and was kind of like a really nice, fortunate head start for me.
Yeah, I view the internships I did at the Atlanta Journal-Constitution and the Atlanta Chamber of Commerce quite similarly, that it really built a foundation. And I think especially at a young age, I had lots of, kid jobs, in my teen years, working in a bagel place and deli and a pet store and, all kinds of stuff, hourly wage work where you certainly learn a work ethic. But in terms of a foundation that will help you going forward in the long term, I agree with you. I think those internships really create that foundation.
And I mean, wow. I mean, I feel like I should thank Durta and Jan for like, giving a kid with absolutely no experience, big swings at like all the briefs that were going through the agency. Like that's a pretty magical thing and something I was really lucky to have.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you then move on and work at two of the great shops, one of which you already mentioned, Crispin Porter Bogusky, really in their heyday. But you also spent some time at another great shop, AKQA.
Yeah, AKQA was, I finished school in San Francisco and I really fell in love with the city and the entire sort of Bay Area experience. And I think it was extra special going to AKQA for me, at least at that time, because like being in San Francisco, that was right before the first iPhone was launched. Digital was exploding and was kind of, becoming its own thing. So it was a really magical time there, and it really felt like you were on the cutting edge of technology and the sectors of business that were really moving culture forward. So it was a really exciting time to be getting started. Now, at the same time, I was, coming out of Miami Ad School thinking that I am now this great gift to advertising. And it was also a very humbling experience to realize that, like, I start the track there was you started as an associate designer. I think there were two or three steps before you made art director. So there was this funny conflict with me where I was coming out of school thinking I'm this, super talented young art director who's ready to go and change the world and all this great stuff. And then very quickly realized, especially from like a technical level and building things and a design level, like, oh my gosh, I'm so green and I have so much to learn. And I was, suddenly surrounded by all of these incredible talents. So it was a really exciting, a very humbling, a slightly daunting place to start my career. But it was, again, I guess looking back, I've just been really fortunate. It was another great foundation in pursuing a career as a creative focused in art direction. Like I got paid to go to design school, which is a really fortunate thing to be able to have experienced.
And let's reflect back on that era. You mentioned the iPhone, that was give or take 2006. YouTube was 2007. Almost all of the topics that we put front and center today in our industry in 2024, not only were they lesser topics back then, some of them didn't exist as topics at all, right? We were way ahead of the items that we'll call them the entrees of our industry today. They were industry today, not even side dishes. Talk about those early days of sort of the emergence of digital and what you saw then through that art direction design lens. Interesting time, interesting reflection.
Yeah, that's a really interesting question because if I can remember that far back, the bulk of the work was, web banners and these little sort of static, or I mean, we would consider them very primitive, flash-based animated little pieces of communication. Now, what was kind of fun about it was like you had this tiny sandbox to play in. It was kind of about hacking the system, especially from a visual standpoint. How can you make the most beautiful and compelling piece of content with a 40K limit, or all the limitations that came along with those small media units. But the other thing that I really remember back then was it felt like everything was constantly changing in terms of the outputs. And like you said, YouTube was just getting started and becoming to be a thing. Facebook was sort of evolving, and there was a time where we went from kind of, I think, like probably the most exciting piece of digital creative when I was getting started was the microsite, which is kind of funny to say out loud now. But these sort of immersive web-based experiences that AKQA and other digital shops were really like pushing the boundaries of like what a digital experience could be. But then Facebook started evolving, and I remember at one point it was like you could connect everything through your Facebook profile. So we were incorporating Facebook functionality and your social media following into our branded experiences. And then Facebook tabs, we were building microsites within social media platforms. So every couple months, it felt like there was some new toy to play with or some new media space that, we could try and crack. And it was a really fun time of experimentation because there were all these little new opportunities that kept popping up to do something interesting on behalf of the brands. And it was, I mean, digital was, it was huge, and it was growing, and there was a lot of focus on it, but it was still, I don't know, kind of early days where it kind of felt like you were kind of, playing over here, and no one was really quite paying attention. So you had some nice creative opportunities to really push it or try new things. And then, yeah, once iPhone launches and, our whole, human behavior patterns changed. It's amazing to see just how much that change has like accelerated, and it's just that times a billion today.
Yeah, I remember years ago. I haven't gone to Cannes in a number of years. A lot of our younger folks go, who are better at drinking rosé than I am. But I remember going, must have been 12, 13, 14 years ago at least, and hearing Bob Greenberg on stage talking. I think it was with the Nokia client, or Nokia, I think is the right way to say it. And that was still the days of sort of the flip, we were very in a very different place in terms of the capabilities of a mobile device. And I remember Bob saying, one day it's going to be like a computer in your pocket. And I walked out of there saying, well, how insightful. That's not really a big insight. And years later, with reflection, I'm like, oh no, it was. And he was right. And when you look at what's happened and the dominance of, the small mobile devices, it's really an incredible evolution, and has happened relatively quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's interesting because I think we have a tendency in this industry, or maybe it's just amongst creatives in particular, but you get used to the big shiny thing, whether back then it was microsites, or I think sometimes it's still film or whatever the medium might be. And I think like that's why it was so advantageous for me to start my career, to be so young in it, to witness that change, and to get to actually have to work and figure out these kind of like emerging media, because I think that sort of set the groundwork for like, any touch point is an opportunity, and it doesn't necessarily have to be the big shiny thing. And sometimes those things that maybe feel small and maybe not all of society fully understands, that's where you can really push the envelope the furthest. And who knows, that may become the next big thing in a year or two.
Yeah, no, very well said. Let's talk about Crispin Porter Bogusky. To this day, Chuck Porter is one of my dearest friends. It was a magical time in our industry, and you could argue if coming up with if we're drafting a football team or a basketball team, you could argue that if you want to draft the number one agency for the past 25 years in terms of that moment in time and impact, Crispin Porter Bogusky could arguably be the number one draft choice by a pretty wide margin. There were some other great shops, large and small, that have had moments, 72 and Sunny had a moment. Certainly some of the big shops, your mothership, BBDO, has certainly had moments. But there was a magic to what happened at Crispin Porter Bogusky. And you were there during the magic hour, if you will.
Yeah. I mean, it was, you know, since we went all the way back, you know, when I was first kind of learning about advertising and getting into it, I mean, I think that's when they were really, really, really in their heyday. I mean, I would just obsess, you know, whether it was like communication arts or wherever I was nerding out on all things advertising, but the campaigns for Mini and all of the work they were doing, I think that was back when they were just in Miami. And it's really like a big force of what got me so excited about the potential of advertising and focusing on creative especially. And yeah, of course, like I said, that heavily influenced my going to Miami Ad School because of the partnership. So I think you're absolutely right. Like Crispin has had such an impact on this industry, and getting to spend a little bit of time there was an amazing opportunity and something when I look back that had like a profound impact on how I view, you know, the types of ideas we want to do for our clients and the types of ideas that, you know, don't just fill a media plan, but like impact culture or, you know, get people truly invested in the idea, get people talking about brands, whatever the brand might be. So it was that whole notion of ideas that, you know, inherently drive PR or get people talking about them was something that attracted me there in the first place. But once I got there, really impacted, you know, I think my mindset on what makes a great idea moving forward.
Yeah, great time. And you were in Miami and Boulder?
Just Boulder.
Okay. So Miami, but not tied to the ad school, but not tied to the shop. And then at some point you get a phone call or an outreach and you wind your way sort of back home to the Midwest and a pretty good gig at a higher level, a VP level, creative director at Energy BBDO back in Chicago, nearby your home state of Ohio.
Yeah, that it was very unexpected. You know, I'll be honest. I always had a list of agencies that I really admired, a list of agencies I always wanted to work for. None of them were technically in Chicago, but I was at this really interesting point in my career where I was kind of, you know, it was, you know, 4 or so years at Crispin. I had learned so much, but was starting to get that itch of like, you know, I wonder what the next challenge is going to be. And suddenly the list of agencies wasn't as exciting to me if it felt like it was just going to be the same thing, you know, in a different city or with a different vision statement or whatever it might be. So I was kind of hungry for something different, but not exactly sure what that meant. And when I got the call to come to BBDO in Chicago, the thing that really stuck with me was the challenge to, yes, become a creative director, which I was also mildly obsessed with at the time. But the bigger challenge of like taking a shop that was, you know, part of BBDO, you know, one of the most highly recognized and most creatively awarded agencies in the world, but the specific office and play a role, you know, they were making a concerted effort to change the creative output of the shop and to come play, you know, at that point in my career would have been the biggest role in maybe having a small hand in moving the needle of the output of an agency. That was the thing I couldn't get out of my head, even though the thought of like going back to Midwest winters was slightly terrifying. And that was ultimately, I think, what won me over, that and the lovely people I got to meet. So yeah, quite unexpectedly, I found myself sort of back in the Midwest, but, you know, at this really exciting moment, both for myself personally, but also the moment in time for this agency in terms of like taking a big leap forward creatively.
And one of the things that I've always observed about Energy BBDO is it's a big shop, but it behaves like a small, more nimble shop. Talk about that culture and the whole sort of intersection of brands and culture that really sits at the heart of Energy BBDO.
Yeah, it's kind of one of the many things that makes Energy special is, you know, it's the might and the weight of the network of BBDO, but we also kind of do our own little thing, you know, and we have a bit of our own way of operating. So that was something that, you know, I sort of didn't realize coming in new. And then once I got here, it was like, oh wow, we kind of got this. Yeah, like you said, we're a bigger agency, but it kind of feels like we're our own little independent entity as well, which was a really interesting tension. And it's been, you know, it's made work really fun and allowed us, I think, to really go on this creative journey as an agency. So, and I think a big part of that is like, we've focused our creative output and the ideas we do on behalf of our clients, but we've focused it in such a way that there's not, you know, I don't think you can necessarily say we're known for any one kind of idea, or we don't necessarily have like a specialty. It is this intentional blending of, you know, commerce and culture and finding, helping brands find ways to be relevant in culture and, you know, not just do nice films or great digital or social first campaigns, but a little bit of everything that maybe you can't quite put your finger on exactly what's the output of the agency. It's this gamut of ideas that sort of blur the lines between advertising and culture and building brands.
Talk about how you maintain that creative edge. And I want to go back and I want to talk about a client of yours, one of my favorites, Patricia Corsi, and some of the great work you did with Bayer. But talk about the creative challenge that you have as the chief creative officer in today's times where, you know, you're in your home, I'm in my home today, you know, I'm still in the office at least 3-4 days a week, but culture is different now. And you're not around the people. I'm certain that when you were at Boulder with Crispin, you were with everybody. When you were out in San Francisco with AKQA, you're with everybody. It's a little bit different now. Talk about maintaining that creative edge in business culture 2024, which is vastly different.
Yeah, it's a great question. And it's something, you know, I wrestle with daily. Because, yeah, change is the nature of this business. And I think it's also, you know, the world's always changing, advertising always is always changing, but it does feel like that change is happening at an increasingly rapid rate. So I really think in terms of, you know, how we maintain a creative edge in the world that we're living in today with all the complications of remote work and agency culture and the different, you know, generations that now make up the workforce. For me, it all comes down to a shared mindset. And if you have that, everything else will sort of fall into place. And what I mean by that, I think one of the biggest challenges, and this is like a journey the agency has been on, I think I can kind of time it back to when I first started just over 10 years ago, is, you know, really building the agency, but specifically the creative department with the right types of minds and the right types of human beings who just want to make great, interesting ideas and who are really passionate about, you know, not just doing the work, but doing work that matters and doing it in a way that you can still have fun and you can, you know, that really majors in being a good human being first and not just a mega talent. So the fortunate position I find myself in, and I think the agency finds itself in, is we've built a department that's just filled with really passionate, really talented, really kind people that just want to make great work. And when you have that foundation, you know, it doesn't matter if you're talking to each other on Teams or if you're jamming in person or if you're doing even like some sort of multi-office new business thing. Like when that foundation of passionate people who want to do great work, when that's all set up and they're in a space where they feel that they have the freedom and the permission to kind of go there, even if they get it wrong sometimes, I think that kind of solves everything else. And then you just sort of, as you know, the tensions of remote work or keeping agency culture, or how do you ensure the young creatives coming up are getting the same level of mentoring, then you can sort of deal with those as they come up. But broadly speaking, you're covered because like everyone's here because they want to do the same thing, which is great work.
So bound together by sort of a common thread of DNA, but very much an evolving environment in terms of the way that we've done things for a couple hundred years relative to how we do things today.
Yeah. And I mean, really, it's funny. It goes back to what we were talking about. Like when I was getting started in San Francisco in early 2000s, and there's all this change, you know, instead of being intimidated by that or reluctant to adopt it, just like running at it and embracing it and trying to find the opportunity in it. I think that's something that's served me well and is really applicable to all of the things the industry and the world are kind of going through right now. And I think like having an open mind in terms of how we do great work, how we get to great ideas, that's something that's like very core to how we operate the agency. So we're continually experimenting with the creative process and how we staff projects and even, you know, how we take our ideas to clients. And, you know, cause I think like, as soon as you have like sort of a formula or you say, look, we've solved it, this is how you get to great work. And then you try and apply that to every client, it's not going to work. I think every brief is unique. Every client is in a special individual situation, and you have to kind of, you know, plan for that with what you have available. So I think that sense of experimentation and always being open to maybe there's a new way to get to the same great thing we're all chasing, that's allowed the agency to be really nimble and to, you know, get to that output that, you know, varies wildly depending on who the client and what the assignment might be.
Very well said. And let's use that as a segue to talk about some of the great work that you've done with Patricia. I know she just left Bayer to go to Kimberly-Clark, but longtime friend. We first met Patricia when she was in Mexico and was one of our early supporters when we launched Advertising Week in Mexico City for LATAM. We've stayed close, but you did some great work there in a category that's not always the easiest, in the pharmaceutical category. Some great work around World Health Day, but talk about that and let's, you know, focus a little bit on the work.
Yeah, and look, the work that we've done over the last few years with Bayer, Patricia is the reason. I'll never forget the first time I presented creative to Patricia, because she's the most, the warmest, most passionate, excited, you know, she gets so excited about the potential of creativity. And as a creative, it was, you know, she leaves a lasting impact of being a great champion for it and what it can do. So, you know, any success and any great work we've done on behalf of Bayer these last couple of years, she definitely had a massive role in. She's a wonderful person and a fantastic client.
And is there a particular campaign, a particular brief, something that, you know, stands out from that whole body of work in your mind?
Yeah, I could talk about so many. I'll start with Diversitree was a really exciting one, because I think that's a lovely, so briefly, in case anyone doesn't know, because I didn't know, there are male and female trees. Turns out male trees spit out a whole bunch of pollen. And if you go back in time in the 1940s, the USDA actually put out a recommendation that urban planters focus on planting male trees in cities as America was growing, because they're easier to maintain. There's not as much cleanup involved. So fast forward to today, where you've got seasonal allergies out of control, so many people suffering from them, and you've got all these male trees now matured in the cities around us spitting out all this pollen, a beautiful opportunity for a brand to step up. And I think do a purposeful kind of idea, but do it in a way that you know, people can relate to and people want to talk about, people can have a little bit of fun with. So, you know, was this idea to plant more female trees in cities across America. Very, very simple, very straightforward. But I think it's like, you know, you mentioned healthcare. I think this is changing very rapidly, which is great. But yeah, not always the most creative industry people might think of. But a wonderful example of how, you know, any brand, no matter how old it might be or how you might not think of it to be like culturally current or dare I even say cool, any brand can do great, cool work that gets people talking and sharing it. And we're right in the middle of developing what's going to be a really great follow-up to that idea, but it's very involved and it's going to take us a little bit of time to get it out in the world, but I'm really excited about that. And what's another example? The gut gap from Miralax. I never realized when I was coming up in this industry that one day I would be really excited to work in laxatives. But, you know, again, when you go back to that mindset of like anything is an opportunity, what can we do here? And you start to dig into the category, you're like, oh, this is ripe for sort of reinvention or, you know, just bringing the conversation down to people's everyday experiences or looking on social media and seeing how people are actually talking about pooping or not pooping. So for Miralax, you know, we actually found that there's this divide between men and women when it comes to constipation, and women are like twice as likely to be constipated than men, right? Of course, like one more thing to add to all of the crap they have to deal with, and stress is a big driver. So, you know, again, this lovely opportunity that we identified, and we went to the brand and said, hey, we can do something about this. You know, we can stand up, we can A, get women talking about this gut gap, and B, you know, we can help them because that's what we do. We're Miralax. So we got together Abby and Alana from Broad City. We reunited them for the first time in 5 years and basically did a mini episode of Broad City that was actually a laxative ad. And, you know, people saw it, they loved it, they laughed, they got the information, and a, you know, a decent number of them bought the product, and hopefully, you know, there's more, a little more poop equality in the world.
Well, what a great example, and pharmaceutical, simply because of the amount of regulation and everything that happens in that sector, definitely tougher. But I love that story, and it's relevant, it's resonant, and your enthusiasm and passion for the work, Josh, is infectious. And I think that's been a hallmark of what you've been able to do as Chief Creative Officer at Energy BBDO. And I'm really glad we had a chance to do this. This was an awful lot of fun.
I really appreciate it. Thanks for the trip down my own memory lane.
There you go. There you go. All right. We'll see you soon.
All right. Thanks so much.